So last weekend was our annual youth retreat to my family's farm in Giddings, Texas. And my thanks to all the students who joined us and to Jennifer Guerin for co-leading the retreat with me. As I mentioned to the community in a letter before Easter, Jennifer has recently come on staff at St. Julian's as our part-time student minister, and moving forward will be coordinating our student ministry called Journey to Adulthood for our middle and high school students. I hope you will join me in welcoming Jennifer to our staff and call on her as she can be helpful to you and your family. You're here, right, Jennifer? So wave at this service. The retreat was loads of fun. Even if showing my age, it took me a day or two to fully recover. Though it is indeed true that our children and teens are our future, they are also our now. They bring many gifts to our shared life as a family of faith. Their energy, playfulness, imagination, thoughtfulness, and faith fill me. Fill all of us with something of what the kingdom of God, which is always present, always around, is to be. That is, though we are indeed called to at times struggle together, even mourn together, share one another's burdens, help carry one another's crosses, and work together even when hard to accomplish God's loving purposes for the world, we're also to take delight in one another, enjoy one another's friendship and company, play together, laugh together, dream together, eat together, learn together, and increase one another's faith in the God of love. To remind one another that with God's help, and despite the real travails and challenges we experience, that the life we share together remains always, as Easter proclaims, a life of infinite possibility. For we worship a resurrected God. Thus life is always teeming among the tombstones. The end of the universe's story has indeed already been written, and the last words are everlasting love and life. So if I can sum this thought up, it is that our children, and when I say our, I mean all of ours, for in the sacrament of baptism, we all commit to seeing that our children are raised in the knowledge and love of the Lord, and indeed it takes a village. I need you all to help me raise my own children, Amelia and Mary Ellen, for you have wisdom and love to share that I do not. And I'm grateful for the ways you care for them. So again, if I can sum up this thought, it would be that our children remind me of the power and potential of Easter, that joyfully reveling in the always being made new and everlasting love life we share together is indeed the life to which resurrection calls us. This is the good news that Easter proclaims for all who have ears to hear, that we are all resurrected to share together the great heavenly feast, the never-ending dinner party that awaits us at the end of this age, and that we have a glorious foretaste of even now. As we open our hearts and minds to one another, connect deeply and take delight in one another. I've said before that the word Eden means delight, and delight seems the perfect word to describe the sort of resurrected life we are intended by God to enjoy with each other. For when we take delight in one another around this altar and around the dinner tables we share, around the meaningful work and learning we participate in together, and I could go on, but said simply, when we lovingly share our lives with each other, Eden is made manifest. The Eden that was at the beginning, the Eden which is now, if at times all too brief, and the Eden which will be. It is for the reclamation of Eden that Easter happens, that Jesus is raised from the dead. Now, as I think back on our youth retreat this past weekend, there are many fun and funny and meaningful memories that come to mind. And when I polled the students, most said that their favorite parts were our extended and very cold, I might add, hay rides. I put our trailer on the back of my car and toted them around the farm, stopping occasionally to skip or collect rocks and wildflowers that shone even brighter than usual against the green fields and gray skies. But it wasn't really the trailer that they loved. It was being in it on an adventure together. And my favorite moments were around the great fire we built in our outdoor fire pit as we grilled burgers and hot dogs, shared a meal around the life-giving heat the fire provided, followed, of course, by roasting s'mores all the while, telling stories, laughing out loud, singing pop songs and Hamilton ballads as loud as possible. And then the next morning, sitting around the dining room table, which was just big enough for us all to gather around to share together another simple meal of grain and grape, what we call Holy Communion. As we broke bread together, we indeed experienced communion, a heavenly union with each other, with the risen Lord indeed in our midst, His never-dying love entirely palpable in the moment we shared. In the life we share together. Which takes me to our gospel lesson. The third resurrection story in Luke's gospel. All three taking place on the very first Easter day. Jesus' friends and followers are gathered again on Easter in the evening, no doubt trying to make sense of what the women told them about the empty tomb, what this means for them, for the world, for this Jesus movement of healing and love that they've shared together for the past 3 or so years, trying to figure out what in the world comes next. When all of a sudden, Jesus is there, standing with them. And Luke tells us they were disbelieving in their joy. In other words, it must be too good to be true. They understandably thought, at least at first, that Jesus must be a ghost. So understanding their apprehension, their wonder mingled with fear, their confusion, Jesus says to them, "Peace be with you," and then offers His body, His wounds, to be seen and touched, for ghosts do not have flesh and blood. And Jesus is no ghost. He is bodily resurrected. It is Jesus in flesh and blood, wounds healed, but still present, reminding them and us that resurrection is not some psychological crutch to assuage human minds anxious about our own mortality. Instead, resurrection is entirely real as you and I gathered together in this room. Resurrection is the remaking of life, of atoms and cells, of all that God has created into something that is altogether new, while not losing anything of what already exists. Resurrection reminds us then that matter matters. That all that God has made is indeed good, as the creation story in Genesis tells us. Resurrection is the promise that God will lose nothing that God has made. That everything and everyone are a part of His plan to restore and redeem all things. Resurrection is the promise that the power of love, a power stronger than death, will, in the fullness of time, remake all of us. Even you, even me. And to the people God intended us to be at the beginning, in Eden, when He spoke the universe into being, humans fully alive, whole, healed, wounds and all, to share a life of love altogether. With God and with each other. For that forever life lived in love with each other is the very thing for which we are made, the very thing for which Jesus lived, died, and lived again. And that shared life that not even death can take away is the very thing that filled my soul as I joined with our students this past weekend around a campfire, around a dinner table, around grain and grape, around even burgers, hot dogs, and roasted marshmallows. Jesus' resurrection body affirms the goodness and eternal nature of our own bodies, which are entirely essential, for they are the first requirement for being in one another's presence. For being with each other. For sharing a love life with each other. And I believe this is why, after offering peace and his body to touch and see, that Jesus asked for something to eat. Yes, ghosts don't eat, as far as we know, and if even real. But much more so because eating is at the center of how we share our lives with each other. If the Lord's Supper, or what we call Holy Communion, was established at the Last Supper, the night before Jesus was crucified, the first Maundy Thursday, then in this moment, on the very first day that Jesus is raised from the dead, we have before us in our gospel lesson one of the first experiences after it has been established of Holy Communion actually happening. Jesus' family gathered together and sharing a simple meal, deeply connected one to another in one another's physical presence with Jesus, the author and source of the love that makes the world go round in their very midst. Love and the resurrection it makes possible, as is always true, is found most fully in relationship. Humans gathered around food or shared interest, united and filled through our mutual bonds of affection, a love shared with each other. And so it continues even now, as we physically gather around altars and tables around the good and at times hard work we share to find our meaning and purpose in the great and small things we get to do with each other. I want to conclude with a poem I wrote about these sorts of gatherings, in particular our table fellowship, where resurrection is both experienced now and promised for the future yet to come, found most meaningfully, most entirely, at least on this side of glory, in the great and small moments that connect us one with another. The poem is called Table Magic. Lights dimmed, calling all to attend to the moment like a gentle warning that the show is about to begin. Candles flitting that guide our gaze from plate to person, from person to plate, all senses on board at a scene set with textiles to touch, patterned china-like art, metal utensils with which to play, savory and sweet smells, primordial parts of our mind switched on. That's garlic for sure. Browned butter and citrus combined, roasted meat whose chemical transformation is a lasting gift of the world's first peoples, earthen humus-like scents from the fruit of the garden bringing the outside in tender and crisp, just a bit of fire releasing their God-made potential, and let us not forget the salt. It brings out the best in all. And grace is then offered like an ephemeral wooden spoon that stirs together all that is set before us with that which we bring together to the table. Our own selves, souls and bodies, hearts overflowing with gratitude for the roof over our head, for the food we take delight in, for the hands that prepare it, for Mother Earth's abundance, for the family to which the table calls us into together. For the beautiful mind who thought the whole thing up. Then taste buds, wake up. As glory enters in, delight in complexity and richness in fat and marrow and grain and grape that all together make the heart glad, the very center of us satisfied in falling in love all over again. The very moment shouting out in a shared voice, wake up and pay attention. This is magic in our midst. For me, this also describes Easter in our midst. Resurrection. Both experienced now and promised for the future yet to come, found most meaningfully, most entirely, at least on this side of glory, in the great and small moments we get to share with each other and with our risen Lord who dines alongside us. At this table that stands at the center of our family of faith, and indeed, however, wherever, and whenever we open our hearts and minds to the love that is stronger even than death that dwells in the very place we connect. We fall in love with each other.